one-year-old birthday party is entirely for the parents. My standard gift for a one-year-old birthday party is a bottle of alcohol for the parents.
Sure.
Like, congratulations, you kept a human alive for 1 year.
What is two then? That's the real question. Standard gift for a two-year-old?
I think we got Timmy Bubbles. I think that might be a new standard gift. That seems to go over really well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I could have used some alcohol after the party. Is that so?
Well, I was otherwise occupied.
The bubble mixture did not do it for me. All right, welcome.
Went
back.
Down smooth.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. And with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
I forgot that part. Noah Lees.
Introduce me.
I did.
Only other person in the room, and yes. You forgot to introduce me.
Yes, Noah Lees here.
We miss you, Elise. We
do.
Hope you are feeling better soon.
Yeah, she has.
She's under the weather.
Yes.
She'll be back.
Under the weather, but she will be back.
Yeah.
Being sick in the RV does not sound like...
God willing, and the creek don't rise, right? That's a thing people say. That's
why not?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe if the creek rises now, they can just turn the RV into a boat. Just float.
I'm not sure it works that way.
I think it should.
Yeah.
We should invent this.
An RV boat.
The Beyond Sunday RV boat. Yeah.
Okay. I'm for it. There are car boats I've seen.
There are. Like military versions of them and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems weird. I don't know. You know, really actually want that.
Well, because you need to, you know...
Well, the military,
it's an amphibious attack, right?
But, like, in your private life.
You wouldn't want to be able to drive your car into a lake, be like, hey, kids, watch this, and just, like, take off? Come on, that'd be fun.
It would be fun for the moment. And then you've got lake water in your car.
I would rent a car like that.
You bet. I would drive somebody else's car in the lake, no problem. Not mine. Yeah. Yeah, sick in an RV does not sound fun.
No.
But we're hopeful that she feels better soon.
Yeah.
Yes, but we're coming at you just Pastor David and myself.
That's right, like the old days.
Yes.
Or the middle days, really. The middle
the
days.
The middle ages, yeah, of the podcast. Yes, there was a plague. There was a plague.
Yep.
I didn't wear any armor, though, unfortunately. There were,
we all put on masks. That's kind of like armor.
Kind of, yeah. I didn't get to carry a sword around. That's the real
thing. Oh,
the real,
sorry. Yeah. Yes. I mean, you were in your house by yourself for like 9 months. You could have carried a sword.
That is true.
No one would have cared.
That's true.
Cat might have looked at you funny.
Yeah. At time of recording, we're recording mm-hmm. Wednesday afternoon, so...
We are
going to talk a little about the Derek Chauvin?
Chauvin is how I've heard it, yeah.
Chauvin?
Yeah.
Or Chauvin? I don't know. I only really read it. I know...
Sure.
It's how, yeah. One of those things. It's like Hermione when you read it in Harry Potter. Yep. Like, what the world is this? Yeah. Okay. Chauvin. Derek Chauvin. Verdict.
Yeah.
Is out there. Yeah, I'm sure our world has a lot of mixed thoughts. We might have some mixed
sure.
thoughts
and
here.
There might be a lot more mixed thoughts that have come out by the time this podcast is released.
That is very
but
true.
But we're going to come out. We're talking about it a little bit less than 24 hours after it happened.
Yes.
So this is our version of a hot take.
Yes. My
more
son.
More of a lukewarm take.
Lukewarm take. Yeah. My son was in speech therapy when I saw that this was going to be released. So I sat in the waiting room kind of just hitting refresh, waiting for this to... come out so I know what would happen.
Nice.
And then my son had speech therapy, so.
There you go.
Yes. So I got a chance to kind of look at it in the moment, do some reading about it there, but we'll get into that. But first, we're going to go over some news.
All right.
Have you ever been eating something?
Yes.
Oh. Done.
I was eating things just a few minutes ago.
Have eaten things. And found an item that should not have been there.
Uh-oh. I feel a Wendy's chili finger coming on here, but...
that was fake.
That was fake. That's true. We've covered that on the podcast, yeah. I believe. I've occasionally found a hair or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, hair's pretty common.
Usually, I cannot think of a time that I found something in, like, food that was prepared for. It's always like, oh, I made this thing myself, and I found my own hair or my wife's hair or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Which I feel like is... probably still equally as gross, but doesn't seem as gross because it's my own stuff. Like, it's nothing that's not already in my life already.
Yeah, because you're like, well, I didn't wear a hairnet.
Right.
So what, you know.
What did I expect to have happen?
Sure. My hair is falling out. So, like.
Aw. Yeah. That was a little unnecessary.
Mine, too. And this is a team here. Elise isn't here, so we can both sympathize in the thinning of the hair.
It is thinning, yes. Yeah. I keep seeing it on the stream every once in a while. I'm like, oh, I gotta stop turning my back to the camera. That's not a good angle.
We need to get this camera's low pointed up. I want a low angle on this.
That's my best side. I do not have a remembrance of like being in a restaurant and finding like a hair or a fingernail or anything like that. Though I've known people who have. So what did someone find?
I have four quick stories.
Okay,
we're gonna do all four at once.
Let's do it.
All right, so a man found in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I heard about this one.
Shrimp tails.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And at first Cinnamon Toast Crunch tried to, like, say that it was, like, an extra crunchy bit of cinnamon. Like,
yeah, that was just part of the mix. It just was not...
That happens sometimes. No! This is a shrimp tail.
Yes, a man found some shrimp tails in his Shrimp-a-man Toast Crunch. Rebranded. Yeah, would you want a little shrimp in your cereal?
I can't say that Cinnamon Toast Crunch would be the cereal in which I would want shrimp.
Yeah, cinnamon and sweet. You wouldn't want that on your shrimp.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe. Yeah. If we get like more of it, like a savory. Yeah.
What cereal would shrimp be like?
Are we allowed to count oatmeal as a cereal in this case? Because
it's not a cereal.
It is in the cereal aisle.
It's not a cereal.
Okay. It's a hot cereal.
It's definitely not a cereal. Like, I don't need our listeners to call in because you're wrong on this one.
All right, it's not fine. A cereal. How about over Cheerios? Because they're pretty bland.
Okay, shrimp and Cheerios.
I probably would not put milk on that.
I would do a Rice Krispie. It's a little shrimp and grits kind of adjacent.
Well, that's why I was going for the oatmeal, because yes. I knew you weren't going to let me count grits as a cereal. So yeah.
Well, Rice Krispies is a cereal, so that's like saying, you know what I would want shrimp in for my cereal? Gumbo. You know, like that's not a cereal.
That's a good idea. Gumbo cereal.
But I definitely would not want shrimp tails.
No.
In there.
Because you're not supposed to eat the tails at all. That's not... Yeah. Just newsflash for our listeners.
Yeah.
Don't eat shrimp tails. That's not what they're there for.
Any shrimp you want with a tail on it, you don't want, like, in a thing. Like, in a broth. Because then you got to fish it out. You got to use a knife and fork.
You want those tails pre-removed. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Shrimp tails when you're just, you know, fried shrimp with a shrimp tail.
Yeah. Well, very handy. Convenient.
Exactly. It's got a handle.
That's right. Food that comes with its own handle.
Yeah.
Much like the chicken leg.
Yes. Found by a comedian, and I think it's since been, like... Some people have said, like, this dude is not that great of a human being. But I don't know him personally.
Not that great of a human being or a comedian?
Probably both.
Cool.
So it could be fake. He is married to, did you ever watch Boy Meets World?
Yeah.
Topanga.
Oh. Topanga grew up and got married to a person who's not that great and maybe not a great comedian.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know him. So.
But found shrimp tails in there.
But a lot of tweets about this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they have kids? Because I'm wondering, like, are there a lot of adults that are eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
I don't know. I don't eat it.
Yeah.
If I don't really eat a lot of cereal.
Yeah.
I, you know, Frosted Mini Wheats, maybe Honey Nut Cheerios.
Really? Frosted Mini Wheats. Okay.
Those would probably be my two preferences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go with Cheerios or a granola, but if I'm doing, yeah.
Okay.
Does granola count as cereal in your little...
If it's a granola cereal, yes.
What does that even mean if it's a granola? Granola is granola.
Are you adding milk?
Yes.
Then I'd count it.
Sometimes I put it over yogurt. Does that change?
Yes. Do you put yogurt in your Cheerios?
No, I put yogurt in my granola.
Then that's no longer a cereal. Look, there's rules here. All right, we're going to power through these. Next one.
All right.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Uh-huh.
Little boy found a bullet.
Yikes. Okay. That's not where that...
Flamin' Hot bullet.
Was it at least, like, it wasn't fired, was it? It was like a...
I think it was still in the casing.
Okay. I don't know if that's better or worse now that I say
that. I'm not sure either. Yeah. What do you think about this?
I don't know much about ammunition and, like, what makes things go. Could a bullet still in its casing, could that have exploded?
So I think it would need to have some sort of ignition point.
Right. It's not like you can just drop a bullet and it goes off.
Probably not. I think on Mythbusters they would say, like, that's not likely to happen.
Okay.
I think you could set off a bullet potentially with, like, a hammer, though, if you hit it on the casing.
Okay.
You know, like, I think that's a potential.
So if you were hammering your bags of Flaming Hot Cheetos, as you do.
Sure. I like to form a powder.
My Flaming Hot Cheeto powder that I can bread my shrimp with before I put them over my Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, Flaming Hot Cheetos breading shrimp might not be bad.
I would eat it.
Yeah, I'd try that. All right. Yeah. What do we got? Do we got two more?
I got two more. A woman ordered from the Cheesecake Factory.
I like the Cheesecake Factory, yeah.
It's fine. The menu is like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, oh, it's nuts.
How is this possible?
But the cheesecake is good.
I'd say everything in there has to be cooked in a microwave. There's no way that a chef is specializing in 800 different things.
You're so judgy in people's ability to provide quality meals for the American
public.
It's
definitely cooked in a microwave. So I'm saying.
I go there for the cheesecake. That's why.
Cheesecake is good.
It's delicious.
A woman ordered mashed potatoes to go. It's crumb
sure.
time.
Yeah.
Found a frog in the mashed potatoes.
A whole frog.
Yeah, dead? Well, a dead frog, yeah.
Oh, okay. So it was like in the water with the potatoes and then just got...
I guess.
Up. See, that's the way you know that it wasn't in the microwave, because the microwave would have exploded that frog for sure.
Maybe I would say the mashed potatoes are probably a powder that they just added to boiling water.
You have no faith in the Cheesecake Factory.
I don't think they have a barrel full of potatoes that they're mashing back there by hand.
I bet they do. I have faith in you, Cheesecake Factory.
If you ever worked at a Cheesecake Factory, let us know, because that is not happening. The Cheesecake Factory did respond.
Uh-huh.
And they said, it's not a frog.
Oh.
It's mold.
It's mold.
Like, that's better.
I mean, I guess I would prefer that it be mold to it being an animal.
I don't know if I would.
I mean, I don't want to get moldy food. I would still be upset about moldy food, but no. I would be less upset about moldy food as opposed to an animal that had died and been served to me in the process of my food being made.
I feel you could say, if it's a dead frog, you could say, like, wow, what a fluke this was. How this happened. Something obviously, a perfect chain of events led to this. Mold is just like, hey, we're not very clean. Like...
Mold on food does not mean, hey, we're not very clean.
Was the mold in there pre or post cooking?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Things happen.
I think that's worse. Last one.
All right.
This is in Australia.
What if it had been a live frog that like hopped into her food container and then closed it in, opened it up, ribbit.
Last one. In Aldi.
In Aldi in Australia.
In Aldi in Australia.
German country. Or German company.
Australia is not German.
German company in a British colony, protectorate, something. I don't know.
Yes. Woman found a venomous snake in her bag of lettuce.
Yeah, this is Australia. This does not surprise me at all.
That's the least surprising place. Yeah.
I just assume that everywhere I would ever go in Australia, there's something that could kill me.
Yes. Now the Australian's like, what do you want? Right. Like, only one? Big deal.
This is part of your salad. We thought you would want that.
All right, those are my four things. Tell me, ranking, which would be the worst?
I would be most terrified by the venomous snake.
Yes.
But I think everyone around me in Australia would be most amused by my reaction to that.
The venomous snake, I definitely think, is number one.
I'm really not a fan of the dead frog. Okay. I'm not.
Or mold.
Yeah, dead frog or mold. Neither one of those. The shrimp tail is kind of like, weird, but okay, it's just a shrimp tail. Like, I've eaten around shrimp tails before.
Yeah, I would not, you know, that's, I would not be like, oh, this is disgusting.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what's this doing here?
This is weird.
Yeah. What was the other one? The bullet and the Flaming Hot Cheetos. That, I mean, again, alarming, but I would still eat the Cheetos.
Yeah, just put that bullet aside.
Yeah. I don't care for the Flaming Hot Cheetos. But,
or you could put it in your gun. I mean, I know you don't have a gun.
I don't
have a gun either.
I could hand it to someone else. Any one of my many neighbors who probably have guns.
Sure. So. But then if you ever needed to shoot the gun, you know, a Flaming Hot bullet is, you know. If you're going to get shot, you know, you want to get Cheetos flavored bullets.
Cheetos flavored.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably agree. I think the bullet is. It's weird. Definitely would warrant a tweet at Cheetos.
But it seems most likely to have been like a worker who was like, oh, won't this be funny? And like dropped a bullet into a bag as the bag got shipped off.
Yeah, or a worker who's probably carrying in the factory.
Yeah.
And probably doing some improper gun safety.
If the bullet is ending up in the bag of Cheetos, I hope that is part of improper gun safety.
Maybe
if proper gun safety leads to a bullet ending up in more Cheetos, we need to reevaluate gun safety.
In this country, it could be a lot worse.
Fair point. All right.
All right.
Things ending up where they don't belong.
Yes. So let's talk about trial.
All right.
George Floyd.
We should probably clarify, we're not lawyers.
We are not lawyers.
Do not turn to Beyond Sunday for your legal advice.
Yes. And we have talked about George Floyd in the summer when we were kind of talking about Black Lives Matter movement.
Yep.
There was a lot of protesting and discussion about the relationship with the black community and the police officers. Yeah. And here we are, ten months later, and we have a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Chauvin convicted on three counts.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts? Let's just start there. Your initial thoughts and reactions, and maybe dive a little deeper.
So this is an interesting thing. I think I was honestly not watching the trial that closely.
There were a few things
going on in the world and in my own life. And so I wasn't paying that much of attention, but I also was kind of mentally preparing myself for him to be acquitted.
Yeah.
Because that has seemed to be the pattern in the past that we offer law enforcement a layer of protection for this sort of action that might not be afforded to others. And, you know, we could get into whether that's right or wrong. That just seems to have been the pattern. So I was kind of mentally preparing for that to be the case, that he was going to be acquitted. So I can say for sure when I saw that he was convicted, my initial reaction was one of a surprise and almost a sigh of relief, thinking, you know, this is a moment where there's some context of justice. Mm-hmm. And that was very quickly overtaken by, but what does that justice really mean and what does that look like?
Sure.
And so there was a moment of a sigh of relief, and then, you know, things changed. But we're going to get into how things changed and what we think about the justice here in a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, in a similar boat, kind of nervous for what this meant. In a national case like this, eyes are on it, you know, we're all kind of anxiously awaiting what happens in our country if he's acquitted. You know, that's question marks. Mm-hmm. What happens if he's found guilty?
Mm-hmm.
Or some acquitted on some, guilty on others?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're all kind of like hopeful.
Yeah.
I'm personally would classify, you know, hopefulness that this can lead to some greater things while we can still find time of mourning and sadness in the death of George Floyd.
Absolutely.
And sadness for all victims from police brutality and sad for police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think all those things are happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, in kind of like the discussion around this particular case over the last 9-10 months has sometimes veered into a little bit of George Floyd was not a great person.
Right.
Like, here are all the things he did that were
not great.
Wrong.
Yeah.
You know, by our societal standards and in the eyes of the law.
Yes.
And I'm not here to defend George Floyd.
Nope.
I don't. I think probably a lot of this George Floyd was not a great person holds water. I'm not saying it's all of it holds water.
Sure.
But I do think a lot of this of like maybe he wasn't this great human being who just all of a sudden found himself on the wrong end of the arm of the law.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is a little irrelevant to the case itself.
I personally would say it's completely irrelevant to the case itself, but that's okay. We can
Sure. You know, I guess it not to say a little irrelevant to George Floyd found himself in a confrontation with the cops based on some life choices.
Mm-hmm.
That is relevant.
Sure.
What's irrelevant is that he died by the hands of a police officer for some very small potential wrongdoing.
Right.
And even if he's wrong, and even if George Floyd should have gone to jail or should have been in trial and should have been convicted of wrongdoing, none of those wrongdoings would have led to a death sentence.
No.
And here we are.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of where I'm starting in this case. Mm-hmm. Like, George Floyd may have been a bad dude, may not have been a dude that we would want volunteering in our ministry here at Lord of Life, maybe a guy who did some crimes and did some bad things in his life.
Very well, yeah.
But to have his life end face down in the street is still an injustice.
Right, without a trial, without...
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that matters, that part of saying like, yeah, that act of itself is an injustice, regardless of his character.
Right.
And so I don't know Derek Chauvin personally on any level.
Mm-mm.
Maybe he's a great cop. I have no idea. You know, I don't think that, from what I've read, I'm not sure that is the case. But I'm not here to defame his character outside of this
conviction.
That is conviction in this instance. I can say for me last summer, kind of watching the video of the 9.5 minutes of struggle, it was really hard to watch. I don't know about you, but it was.
Yeah.
I forced myself to watch it. And I don't always do that because I don't necessarily want to watch human beings die.
Sure.
But I did force myself to watch those 9.5 minutes just to say like, wow, this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point did all the ways something could have changed and we wouldn't have gotten here. At no point did any of those things change.
Right.
For 9.5 minutes. And that was really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that you've kind of had a little more time to process and think about things, you kind of mentioned this idea of like justice.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as I've started to look at this, I there are a couple of things that I want to be clear about. I completely understand people who look at this as a point of celebration is maybe too strong a word, but as a point of relief, as a point of saying, you know, finally some form of justice has been offered in this. Mm-hmm. I completely understand and respect that position. But I think we're selling ourselves short if we allow ourselves to believe that a criminal prosecution and conviction will ever ultimately lead to the justice that we seek, right? I think it's wishful thinking to say, oh, well, this police officer was convicted of this crime, and so other police officers aren't going to do this same thing. Mm-hmm. Within half an hour before the announcement happened, there was a 16-year-old girl in Columbus, Ohio, who was shot by police. Very different circumstances.
Sure.
Things are still very fresh, and so we'll probably know a lot more by the time this podcast is released than we do right now, but all circumstances point to she had a weapon and was potentially lunging at someone. But we also have to ask ourselves, why is a gun being used to stop a knife? And, you know, there are lots of questions that go into this. And so I think that as Christians and as people of faith, we have to be willing to ask ourselves, how are we striving towards a grander vision of justice than just a conviction? Because ultimately, you know, God's vision of justice, the vision of justice that we're told over and over about in scriptures and through the stories that we hear every Sunday, is one in which there is justice for George Floyd and there is justice for Derek Chauvin. And ultimately, that justice brings both of them to God's table. And in moments like this, it's easy for us to cast out Derek Chauvin. Mm-hmm. Conviction, prison sentence, all of these things are appropriate actions for what happened, in my estimation. But that does not put Derek Chauvin outside of the grace of God. Mm-hmm. This is for me what's always most powerful when I go back to the shooting of the 9 members of Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, which was back in 2015, was the way in which those family members at the arraignment of the shooter spoke about forgiveness in that moment. That they were already, this was days after the incident had happened, and they were already speaking very clearly and verbally saying, there are going to be repercussions for your actions. There are going to be consequences, but we forgive you. And we want you to know the forgiveness, because that forgiveness, that grace of God, is bigger than any form of justice that our judicial system can acquit. And we've spoken about this difference between like judicial justice and God's vision of justice before. I think we used a Tim Keller piece to talk about that. But that's really where I've been sitting and wrestling with, because I think it's hard for us to get our head around. This conviction is in some level, it is in some level helpful. It's helpful to the grief process. It's important. It's important to the process of hopefully moving in a better direction. It's still not justice.
Yeah.
It's still not going to fix, the larger problems. And those larger problems are ultimately all rooted within ourselves.
Sure.
And, that's ultimately what we're looking at. There are two thoughts that I'll share really quickly and then I'll shut up for a minute, but Sunday's reading, the reading that when this comes out will have been yesterday, is the reading from Acts is Peter before the high priest and the council, and he testifies about this Jesus, and he says, this Jesus is the only name by which we can be saved. Mm-hmm. And Peter is standing before the very people who killed Jesus and saying, we, invoking everyone in that room, we can be saved by this name. And I think that's powerful to remember. Like, these are the ones who put Jesus to death, who said to Pilate, "Yeah, crucify him." That's the one. And yet Peter says, "No, this redemption, this salvation is for you as well through the name of Jesus." I think that's been circling around in my mind this week as I've been hearing the news of this trial. And then alongside of that is the words. I think it was Dr. King, but there have been phrases out of the Indigenous people of Australia and other things like that have come alongside of these similar thoughts of essentially my salvation is tied up in the salvation of others, right? Mm-hmm. That I cannot be fully whole as long as someone else is bound in oppression. Yeah. I think the Indigenous persons from Australia use the phrase something like, if you come to save me, then don't bother coming. But if you come because your salvation is tied up in mine, then come and work with me, kind of thing. And that kind of nature, I think, is helpful, because my salvation, right, not just my rightness with God, but my wholeness with God, is tied up in the salvation of George Floyd and in the salvation of Derek Chauvin, and in working in reconciliation and justice on both sides of that. And that's it's a really difficult place to be. And it's difficult as people of faith, because our world tells us to pick one side or the other. Even really, you know, movements that we might fully agree with, right? You know, if you stand with Black Lives Matter, they'll say you can't support Derek Chauvin. You can't think about it. And if you stand with, the Thin Blue Line, you can't have any sort of mercy or anything for George Floyd. Right? They'll both draw this line in the sand. And as Christians, as people of faith, we really have to say, no, our salvation is tied up in redemption for all of this.
Yeah.
And that's I am finding that to be a difficult place to continue to stand.
It is. I think, there's a reason, Jesus asks us, his followers, to love enemies, pray for those who are persecuting you, to really stand for concern for those that you see as the bad guys.
Yeah.
And again, whatever side you may find yourself on, in this instance, if your inclination is to solely vilify the other, I don't think you're doing this right.
Yeah.
I don't think you're, and that doesn't mean if you're on the side of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, and you're saying, you can ask for justice and real conviction and real consequence for Derek Chauvin and the other officers at the scene. And that doesn't mean that absolves them of this thing.
Right.
And if you find yourself on the other, you can say, hey, we want to support police officers. Yeah. We believe they're putting their life on the line for the community, which there's very real truth to.
Absolutely.
And that does not absolve every cop for every wrongdoing that they do while wearing a uniform.
Yeah.
I read today on NPR that since 2005...
It's been 16 years.
Yes.
There have been 2005 is 16 years ago.
I know. Yikes.
Math is the worst.
Because you'd be like, hey, what was 16 years ago? I'd be like, I don't know, 93?
Yeah. Sounds about right.
But since 2005, there have been 5 convictions in the United States on officers of the law who, for a murder or manslaughter charge while in the line of duty.
So they killed someone while in the line of duty and were convicted for wrongful death.
For wrongful death.
In 5 instances.
Well, there have been a few that have been convicted and then appealed.
Okay. But these are 5 that overturned.
That stuck, in a sense. That's not a lot.
It's not a lot. In comparison to the large number of people who have died in police custody or in confrontation with the police in one way, in one form or another.
Yeah.
Which I don't have a statistic on that, but that's not a lot.
That's definitely not a lot. I think if you think in your own mental Rolodex of like, hey, what are some national things that I've heard of a cop involved shooting that maybe that person didn't have to die over the last couple of years? It's more than 5.
Yeah.
And not to say there have been instances, like I think in the Breonna Taylor situation, those 3 officers involved in her death were fired. That's a consequence.
Yeah.
You know, I feel
they haven't been accused, or they haven't had any sort of trial for those.
I don't, officers. And I'm not sure there will be one.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it does definitely have a question, I think, for the Black community or the minority community or country of like, if police are allowed to do this, and if we did not have that 9.5-minute video, and we didn't know, we didn't see it with our own eyes, and if there wasn't national attention on this one case, I think the question that is, I think, reasonable to say, like, would we have gotten this conviction?
Right.
And I would say probably not.
Yeah.
And I would say even if you're, you know, where back the blue at the blue line, you would probably say probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like that the national attention really drove this to even get to a court system. I know there's been discussion about like, well, then is it possible that a jury of his peers could be unbiased when you're at this level? I'm not here to debate that.
That's for an appeals process. That's not for this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And I trust the jurors made the best decision with the information that they were given. I do. Whether you agree with them or not, you know, we'll see.
Sure.
But I do think that there's the question of, like, we never would have even reached a trial if it was not for national attention on it. I think there is truth to that.
Yeah.
And so I think this does read, so what does this mean for justice in the now? And also, what does it mean for justice going forward for us as a nation, to stand alongside those that are victims? And just because a person wears a badge does not make them good as a human being.
Sure.
In fact, there have been plenty of instances where a person wears a badge and is objectively bad for society and not just did a bad thing in the moment where they saw somebody and panicked. They're just really a bad person who wears a badge. Just like a person who joins the armed forces and defends our country. They're not all good human beings. Right. You know, we're using good in quotes here.
Right.
You know, like, there are plenty of people who have committed war crimes and have done atrocities while wearing a uniform. But I think that hopefully this can lead us to a place of some hopefulness that if a person does a wrong thing while wearing a badge or in the office of the state, there are real consequences.
Yeah.
And not just slaps on the wrist or not just, hey, we're absolving this because of all the other people who wear badges that we really, really like.
Yeah.
And,
you know, in one sense, I've been thinking about this connotation, and this is maybe not the best example, but I think it's helpful, right? You know, within the church, sexual abuse, particularly sexual abuse of minors by clergy, has been a huge story.
Yeah, and rightfully so.
Yeah, rightfully so. And it has throughout history not been handled well, right? As has been revealed by any number of reports and you know, we'll call them scandals, but just, you know, reports on abuses and things that have been covered up, whether it's in the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church, or even, you know, churches within the ELCA have dealt with this as well, right? And it's not been on the same kind of grander scale, but churches in the ELCA have dealt with this. I, as a pastor, would never have an inclination to say about a fellow pastor who was convicted of one of these things, oh, well, you know, this was a pastor. You know, he's a good guy, or she's a good girl. You know, it's just, in my estimation, if I hear this about a colleague, even a colleague who I you know, previously trusted and previously adored, my inclination would be to say, for the good of the church, you need to be out of this role, and we need to execute the full extent of, you know, the law to for the good of Christ, right? I mean, because we can't allow that. I mean, I think this is supported by a lot of writings of Paul too, right? You have to cut out those things which are poison to the body. That does not forbid that person from redemption,
of course,
but we absolutely have to remove them from that role,
sure,
and you know, invoke the process by which we move to conviction. And there doesn't seem to be that same willingness. I don't know how to describe it. I'm not a police officer. I'm not someone who served in the military, so I don't know what this it seems like deeper than camaraderie, but there's something that bonds.
It's a brotherhood, you know. Yeah. That's how it's kind of described.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, the Catholic Church and their improprieties with, you know, young boys is objectively wrong.
Right.
What made it worse was the higher ups, the bishops, and the system sought to protect the priest and not the victim.
Right.
And that would made that worse, not only for those children, but also for their relationship with their communities.
And for the church's relationship with those communities. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the greater church's relationship with the communities. It kind of said, like, we cannot be trusted.
Yeah.
And if something goes wrong, we're going to protect ours before we protect yours.
Which
feels
counter to what Jesus demonstrated for us. So, you know, as people of faith, it seems like Jesus was regularly taking the side of the victim, right? Of the oppressed, of the downtrodden, of the ones who were so. Which is not to say that he didn't also love and care for the oppressors, right? I mean, he, you know, healed the centurion's servant. He, you know, had dinner with the high priests, and, or not the high priest, but with the Pharisees and stuff like that. And Peter preaches before the high priest saying, this salvation is for all of us, right? This is, you know, so it's not to say that Jesus' salvation isn't for the oppressors. But Jesus seemed to take the side of the victim.
Sure.
And as people of faith, I think that we should be more willing to live into that, which is not to just cast out all police or cast out all clergy and say, oh, you're all done. None of you can be trusted because of this one thing. But we should be more willing to say, for the good of this institution, I don't want to say institution, for the good of the church, for the good of the greater community, we have to invoke trust. Because now we have a society that doesn't trust the police.
Sure. And I would say in terms of the Catholic Church, the priests that knew and protected the priests should not be trusted by their community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just like cops wanting to see impropriety on the job and wanting to, again, protect one of ours before we protect one of yours, they should not be trusted. That's no longer a bad apple. That's a lot of bad apples.
Yeah.
That's our people willingness to say, like, yeah, they're bad, but they're one of ours.
Yeah.
And so we're going to protect them. And this can happen not just for police officers or clergy. I mean, on our political lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
On our racial lines, on our family lines, on our whatever lines you want to draw.
Yeah.
This can happen easily. But I do think that that does, and especially now we're living in a world where everyone has cell phones and there's cameras everywhere. And we're getting more and more of this. You know, Will Smith, the actor, I think he's...
Of Fresh Prince fame.
Fresh Prince, yes.
In West Philadelphia, he was born and raised
on a
playground that he spent most of his days.
he said, like, when all these videos come to light, he says, like, this isn't new. You're just now seeing it.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I think that that does really raise some questions. It asks us to hold police to a higher level of accountability than maybe they received in the past.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just saying, like, hey, whatever that means for our civic communities, of saying, like, we want body cam footage released.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's not perfect. I know it can't show the whole story.
Yeah.
But we also want to say, police, we want you to be on board with this because we want to make sure you're protected.
Yeah.
In this instance, you know, in Columbus, this officer-involved shooting of a young girl with a knife, I want to make sure if the cop made the right decision, we can say,
we watched the thing and we say, what can he do? Yeah.
You know, and not be left with the community saying, all we know is the cop showed up and a girl is dead.
Right.
What do we do with that? Why do we want the cops to show up?
Yeah.
You know? And so I think, like, that level of accountability helps both sides.
I would think so, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I am helped by going through, you know, sexual ethics training and boundaries training and things like that to ensure that I don't allow for the opportunities for accusations to come up falsely against me. And I'm helped because my community knows that I know how to protect children and how to protect vulnerable adults, and that they can trust me, right? I'm helped in my relationship with my community because I've gone through this sort of training and because I uphold those, and you know, and I go through those trainings regularly to ensure that I continue to follow best practices.
Yeah.
At Lord of Life, we're helped by every person who works with kids going through our Safe Sanctuary training to ensure that they understand the repercussions of not following these policies, and by removing those who don't. And that, and that's hard, but that's, you know, that's how we build faithful communities that are nurtured in trust. And that seems to be, I think, if we're ultimately looking for justice, we can't just hope that we'll get a conviction when somebody dies. We have to be striving to work for justice on the front end, and we have to be striving to work for justice together, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, the Black Lives Matter movement and the Thin Blue Line movement need to get together and say, how do we actually make a difference in changing this going forward? Because both sides seem to be more interested at yelling at one another than actually working to find change.
Yeah. I don't know what that's going to look like or how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm hopeful.
That seems to be where God's justice would be, though.
Yes.
If we're looking for a biblical vision of justice, it would be somewhere there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful that this can maybe lead us that direction.
This podcast?
Not this podcast. But this. Obviously this podcast.
Yeah. This is going to be world-changing.
You know, police captains and whomever is in charge of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
Pass them along.
That's right.
No, hopefully that this conviction does lead us somewhat in that direction, that it does tell police officers in their communities, like, hey, we are watching. And a big section of our communities are not trusting
yeah.
the police
yeah.
or nervous around the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not enough just to say, like, well, don't do anything wrong and then the cops won't bother you. Because there's been too many stories of people yep. not doing anything wrong and ending up dead.
Right.
Or doing something kind of wrong.
Right.
And still ending up dead.
Right.
But I did things wrong and I ended up dead.
Yeah.
You know, like a speeding ticket is not a death sentence. You know, getting pulled over in the middle of the night shouldn't be a death sentence for a person in their car. And yet, it happens.
Yeah.
So hopefully that this can lead us to, like, hey, we are, as a country, committed to protecting vulnerable people, even if it means convicting those that serve our communities.
Yeah.
And that's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very hard, but I think there's faithfulness in yeah. that. And, you know, as a podcast where we're trying to take our faith beyond Sunday morning, I think that's an important thing that we can do. Yeah. You know, Martin Luther King said the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yes.
I think if I'm not completely destroying that quote.
That's rightish.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is one way in which the arc of the universe is bending towards mm-hmm. justice. I do think it's a bend in that direction, but I don't think that the arc is complete. I don't think we've reached the end of the mm-hmm. rainbow, which was the only other thing that I could think of that arcs.
Yeah. McDonald's.
We haven't reached the end of McDonald's golden arches.
Yeah. I'd say if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, I'm 100% on board. I agree with you guys. This is what similar feelings when I listen to or I read about the court case, or I've been following this
yeah.
Since last May. I think the challenge that Jesus would offer you is, how committed are you to pray for Derek Chauvin?
Now you're just making it up.
I am. Derek Chauvin, other police officers who have been found guilty in the court of public opinion or in real life of impropriety and abusing the office that they've been entrusted with. How committed are you to doing that? And if you've been listening to this, and I don't know how you got this far, and you're like, you guys are dummies, I completely disagree, what happened here was a travesty.
Sure.
I want to say Jesus is going to maybe challenge you. How committed are you to praying for the family of George Floyd, for those that are shot by police officers? Even if you say they shouldn't have been doing something wrong, a life has ended.
Yeah.
And a family is mourning.
Yeah.
And how committed are you to praying for those families and mm-hmm. to those people? Mm-hmm. And to those that, whether you agree or not, have a perceived injustice at the hands of the police.
Yeah. And not just, this is my addition to that challenge, not just pray for them to see the world the way you do.
Yeah.
But pray for them that they would know the peace and comfort of God. Pray for them that they would
mm-hmm.
that they would have an encounter with Jesus that transforms their hearts, right? Pray for them in something other than just mm-hmm. let them see that I'm right.
Yeah,
that's not
sure.
That's not what Jesus tells us to pray for, and that's not just how, you know, when Jesus says pray for love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Jesus isn't telling you to just pray for them to see things the way you do.
Yeah.
He's telling you to pray for their hearts and their minds, that God would work in them.
Yeah.
Well,
this has kind of been a little bit of, hey, we had this major thing happen in our country.
Yeah.
Let's just put down a microphone
and
just see where it goes.
We had other plans.
We did. Yeah.
And then the world happened.
Yeah. And so, we're sad Elise couldn't be here to offer her opinion and perspective. I'm sure it would have been wonderful.
I'm sure she's shouting it into the podcast as she listens right now.
Yes, over her SoundCloud on her laptop, because she doesn't understand how podcasts work.
Aw, poor Elise.
That's her, her words.
We tease because we care.
Yes.
We hope she feels better.
We do. Yeah. All right.
Well, hey, if you liked what you heard today, or if you have thoughts on anything that you heard, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can share this episode out with all of your friends through Apple Podcasts, through Google Play, through Spotify, or through sharing a link to the website, and they can download it and put it onto a cassette tape and play it in their 8-track tape. And
just play it over your speaker system, hold it over your head, walk around.
That's right. hold it outside the window of your loved one, and we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you next week.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Guns.